Kelly Lincoln with Delta Discovery with the next question.
Some codes are not being enforced, like the plastic bag ban. What are solutions to ensure city codes are enforced?
Haley Hansen.
Yes, so plastic bag ban. Let's see. Well, we don't have a code enforcer, as far as I know, in this town. It's as far as I know, it's left up to individual departments to enforce code. So I would explore ways to make sure that code is being enforced where the community is concerned it isn't being, and that they feel there's more to do there. Thanks.
Mark Springer.
Yeah, the plastic bag, the styrofoam ban is one that's been in place for quite a while, and the city hasn't put any teeth into it. There are probably some strategies that we could use, but there's been a lot of pressure from the commercial side not to enforce it. We can't even get the police to drive by the bingo hall on a weekday night and tell cab drivers they're not supposed to be smoking in their cabs. So, there are a lot of things in this town that aren't enforced.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
So a code enforcer is actually something we've been discussing on Public Works for a couple of months, and actually our next meeting is tomorrow night at 6:30, if anybody wants to join. We will be reviewing a previous job description for a code enforcer so we could get a better handle on what that might entail and if we need to make any revisions to it. We currently, right now, have the support of the Public Works Director in going forward with this. So, we've just been trying to make sure we have a really good argument before we brought it before council.
Thor Williams.
One of the other laws that's not enforced in the community that concerns me highly is the helmet law. I bring that up multiple times as a council member in council meetings. One of the issues that council has to do and one of the priorities it has to work on is that communication for the city manager. You can sit up on city council and sit in these seats for a very long time and ask the managers to do something, but if he's unwilling to do it, he won't do it. So if you have to ask the city manager has to ask the police chief and it has to get that accomplished.
CC Franco.
Alyssa, that's a wonderful idea about a code enforcer. I wasn't familiar with that. I am, however, chair of the Finance Committee, and we've been talking about something similar to start enforcing the city sales tax code. There's a lot of missed revenue that the city should be taking advantage of, and by having a way to enforce the code would be beneficial to the city. It's great to see lots of different ideas that happen on these committees, and if I'm elected to city council, I'd like to start better utilizing the city's committees and commissions.
With our next question, Greg Kim of KYUK.
If both alcohol and marijuana local options pass, that eliminates $600,000 of projected tax revenue. What services would you cut, or how would you create alternative revenue streams?
Thor Williams.
First off, I think if that is cut this year, we would have to work into our endowment fund to keep the city going forward and looking at the next budget cycle to look at what services are going to have to be looked at to be continued to serve the community as a whole. What part are we going to take out? What the community would like to see less of? I don't think we can do less in policing, and we need to do more in road development. But at this point, you would have to look at using the reserves to cover that loss of revenues until the next budget season.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
So there's a few different ways, I think, that we could make up some of that, at least. I was unaware of it being a $600,000 potential. But, I think promoting business opportunities for businesses other than alcohol and marijuana sales in this community, if we can bring more businesses here that we could collect sales tax from that their main commodity is not being detrimental to our community. I think another thing we could do is ensure all departments with revenue sources are accurately correcting and billing all of their customers.
CC Franco.
I think we would definitely need to take a look back at the budget and see how we could cut things. I think another good idea would be to look at the online sales taxes. I know the city was coordinating with AML I haven't heard a lot about that recently, but I think we're missing out on revenue opportunities through people who are buying things online. I know personally I shop a lot on Amazon or Target, and I don't know that the city is always getting the sales tax for that.
Haley Hansen.
So I also agree with the other candidates that, you know, we can't give up public safety, infrastructure, those things, but also supporting small businesses and looking for creative solutions. And there are a lot of people in this community with a lot of great ideas. And I think opening it up to the community to invite people in and say, hey, how do we do this? How do we fix this? How do we increase revenues? And also making sure that we are tightening up code enforcement too with that collection. Thanks.
Mark Springer.
You know, in some respects, that's kind of a boogeyman question. How did we budget before we had alcohol sales in Bethel? Granted, we might find ourselves in the position of, getting in a PERS beef if we have to reduce some positions, but we certainly have a model of how to operate on $600,000 less, making up, you know, what is represented by a 15% sales tax now on alcohol and potentially marijuana will be a pretty heavy lift.
Christy Schallenberger of KYUK with the next question.
The city invested in a pool and fitness center. Are there other amenities the city should invest in for the community?
CC Franco.
I believe we should continue to invest in different infrastructures around town, whether that be water and sewage infrastructure, potentially creating new subdivisions or other things. I don't really have any other ideas besides that.
Haley Hansen.
Yeah, so I definitely think, keep investing in the pool and fitness center. But for other amenities, I think that, you know, we have the 4-H center, teen center, but investing in something for youth that are maybe out of school, that kind of 18 to 22-year-old range, I don't quite know what that would look like, if that'd be like a pool hall or something like that, but something for them to do that gives them a place to socialize and stay out of trouble, basically, because they're – thanks.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
I think the pool is amazing. And we need to keep expanding that, as the Lifesavers Fund has been working to open up a gym that is very much needed. I think the high school gym, they have trouble, different groups have a lot of trouble trying to schedule events there when there are so many other people that are looking to use it all the time. So I think going ahead with the gym for the pool, the expansion for that, and then also anything else we can provide for kids to stay busy and stay out of trouble.
Thor Williams?
I would look at developing a better youth center for our community. Our youth center is old. We need to develop a better youth center to meet the needs of our young children. I think that's something that our young families need, is a latchkey program to have a place for their children to go to after school so they feel safe and secure. That we also work on a public works building. I think our public works building is starting to show its age, and we need to have that infrastructure in place so that we don't get lost in the cost of providing water and sewer.
Mark Springer.
Just to kind of correct the question, the funding for the pool was a legislative appropriation that the city accepted. We did put a little bit of our own money in it, but to call it an investment of city funds isn't exactly accurate. However, infrastructure investment is a responsibility of the council on behalf of the community, and we have an awful lot of needs. The water pipes up in housing, the potential expanding water and sewer out the highway to Larson, Casale.
Kelly Lincoln of Delta Discovery with the next question.
How can the city better control loose and stray dogs in Bethel?
Melissa Gustafson-Leary.
I think, there's been a lot of talk at council about hiring a full-time dog catcher, and I've been looking forward to seeing Councilmember Charles's work on that. He said he's working on that. That's definitely a priority for a lot of people in this community. I hope that we don't have to wait until something even more severe than the bite I think a lot of people saw over Facebook to a small child. I'm hoping it doesn't have to come to something worse in order for us to get a dog catcher.
Mark Springer.
Yeah, we used to have a pretty effective animal control officer here in town. You know, the idea of a code enforcement officer who would also be a dog catcher, there's no telling what he or she would spend most of their time on, but obviously, you know, loose dogs is an issue. We probably need a little bit stronger ordinance here in town. I mean, everybody's got at least one dog, and some have got yards full.
Haley Hansen.
Yeah, so I think the work that Bethel Friends of Canines is doing is amazing stuff, and there's so many volunteers, and I'm always surprised to see how many people are volunteering, and I think it's amazing, but I mean, they need help, like from somebody who's doing this full time, because, you know, most of the volunteers, if not all of them, have regular jobs that they're doing throughout the day. So I think definitely investing in a full-time dog catcher would be the way to go, and it sounds like that has a lot of support, so hopefully that can go through pretty easily.
Thor Williams.
I think first off, we need to work with our citizens and educate them what it means to have loose dogs in our community so that they understand that maybe they should tie their dogs up and not let them out the door at the middle of the night so they can do their business without being chained. I think lots of times we in Bethel like the aspect that we live in rural Alaska and that people don't tell us what to do. But in some senses, we need to educate our population to put their dogs on leashes and hook their dogs up so they're not running around the community.
Cece Franco.
I agree with everything that's already been said. It's definitely a great idea to continue working with community partners that are already combating this issue, like Bethel Friends of Canine. I know that the city previously had a dog catcher, and it sounds like it's a good idea that we look into finding funding and making room in the budget to potentially hire one back again.
Greg Kim of KYUK News with the next question.
How will you get community feedback to inform your decisions on council?
Cece Franco.
That's a good question. I would definitely make sure that I'm accessible to members in the community, whether they want to give me a call. You can call me at 545-0954, or you can send me an email if you see me out within the community if I am elected. I would like to hear back from the constituents. We are hired and we are voted to serve on city council at the pleasure of the mayor and at the pleasure of the community. And I definitely would like to do my best to serve the community.
Thor Williams.
My numbers are posted on the city webpage. I have a Facebook page. I have open to anyone that calls. I go and talk to people in the community, say hi to people that I've known for a long time, try to say hi to new people in the community to see what they have to say. And I try to hear what they have to say to make determinations that happen on this table in front of the people within our community. As a representative form of government, we're here to represent the people.
Mark Springer.
Go shopping.
Haley Hansen?
Sorry, could you repeat the question one more time?
How will you get community feedback to inform your decisions on council?
I think that, you know, how it's mostly been done is if people have things to say, they show up to council meetings, or they talk to you in the street about it, or you hear about somebody who said something, right? We're a very word-of-mouth town. But I think also if we wanted to explore this, we could set up something like, I don't know, like a Google form option or something where people could submit that maybe don't feel comfortable coming in and talking in front of everybody on the radio and in person, so that we're still getting feedback in a different way. Thanks.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
I think I like the idea of making yourself available while you're grocery shopping. I think that happens to a lot of people already, unless you really try to go when there's nobody there. I think you know, just making yourself available. When I worked on the dumpster project with the Public Works Department, I reached out to, I emailed about 40 or 50 community members so that they could give me feedback on suggestions that I was going to go forward with for Public Works. So I think things like that, you know, weighing in on active community members, what they think about where you're going, if you're going in the right direction.
Christy Schallenberger of KYUK News with the next question.
Council will be hiring a new city attorney and city manager. What are the qualities and qualifications you will prioritize?
Mark Springer.
Well, in 30 seconds or less, city manager should preferably have some Alaska experience, some rural experience. The situation in the state at a number of levels is getting very dynamic, and somebody from Podunk, Indiana, no matter how well experienced they are, is going to have a heck of a time here. Whether we hire an attorney or a legal firm by the hour, I would say I would like to see remains to be seen. Obviously, they've got to be really familiar with Title 29.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
I think looking for both positions, a manager and an attorney, we really need to find someone or two people that are interested in staying in Bethel longer, you know, than a year or two, especially if they're coming from the outside, which a lot of times that is what happens. People come from maybe other parts of the state, but, you know, it's really beneficial if people in those high-level positions will be around long enough to really get a handle on what they're doing.
Cece Franco.
I agree with the comments already made. I think the best fit for city manager and city attorney would be someone who can fit in well in Bethel. I also think it's really important to look at their references, make sure that they're positive and that their experience really shows through all their different previous positions, and that, you know, if they have rural experience, if they're already familiar with Bethel, that's even more of a plus.
Haley Hansen.
Yeah, so I definitely think, you know, we've been talking about retainment and finding people who are experienced with rural Alaska. That would be, I think, ideal. But also making sure that we're finding people who are experienced, but also not headed out the door, aren't going to retire in a year or two. You know, they may bring a wealth of experience, but if we only get to have them for a year or two and then we have to go through this whole process again, I don't think that's useful. I don't even know that that would be worth it in the long run. Thanks.
Thor Williams.
I think we have to find somebody that understands, as stated, Title 29, the state laws that govern our local city council, Bethel Municipal Code, and what those laws entail. And also have experience of being living in a small town, living in Alaska, understanding the challenges that it means to live in our small towns. We have a lot of people that want to have open communication with their city manager, from people from the public, and they have to be able to communicate both sides of the aisle on city council.
Kelly Lincoln of Delta Discovery with the next question.
How can the city plan for a growing demand of services with the YKHC expansion and potentially the Donlin Gold Mine development?
Haley Hansen.
Sorry, could you repeat that one more time?
How can the city plan for a growing demand of services with the YKHC expansion and potentially the Donlin Gold Mine development?
So I think this goes back to what we were talking about with the housing. I mean, we already have a housing shortage as it is. And so looking at these other options of whether it's extra properties that are available or looking at efficiency housing or working with ONC, I think we kind of have to get ahead of this too and maybe not be so reactionary, but try to plan for this so that we can have it in place before the inundation. Thanks.
Thor Williams.
I think that we have to be able to open up more subdivisions within our community. A lot of those issues comes down to who owns the land. There's a lot of native allotments within our community, and Bethel Native Corporation owns a lot of the land within our community, and we have to work with those entities to open that up. If we had the road through the donut hole that was started way back in 2005, we might not have that issue today, but that wasn't moved forward by administrations in the past because other people had concerns for their own subdivisions. So that is a concern.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
So I think it's, you know, a lot of people, I think, automatically want to go negative with, you know, adding more people coming to town. But I think if we're adding in paying customers to the system, that as long as we can keep up with demand, that it, that could be positive for the community. And with, you know, with water and sewer, the theory I have with that is that if the billing is already set up accurately, that each customer should already be paying the true cost of that commodity, so it shouldn't matter how many more customers we add on, especially if we're moving towards more.
That's all we have time for. Mark Springer?
I've said, I think every time I've run for city council, is that as far as Donlin Creek goes, Bethel should try to set itself up as the residential community of choice for people that are working there. And that's not an endorsement of the mine, but it is the direction we ought to be thinking. But I will say that if the 400 new employees for YKHC show up anytime soon, we're in a lot of trouble.
CC Franco.
Mark, I kind of disagree. I think it's a lot easier for folks to take a charter plane straight from Anchorage to the site of Donlin Gold. I think it's a little naive to think that this community will see a lot of financial advantages if the Donlin Gold mine does go through. As far as just strategic plans for future growth, I think it's most important to, like someone said previously, to not be so reactive, to get things situated currently with how we run our city.
Thank you. Greg Kim of KYUK News with the next question.
Should snares be regulated within city limits and near trails? If so, how?
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
Snares, like hunting snares? Yes, they should definitely be regulated within the city limits. I've seen over my course of living here many times where people have posted on Facebook about their dogs getting caught in a snare really close to town. I think, you know, we could set some realistic, reasonable code with that so that, you know, I wouldn't want my foot getting caught in one of those either, so that people can be safe as they're enjoying the outdoors around our community.
CC Franco.
I personally am unfamiliar with how we would go about enforcing that, but I do believe it's a good idea, similar to what Alyssa just said. I've known of many different animals, pets, getting caught in snares. It's definitely a public safety concern, and it's great that a lot of folks in the community are able to go out and utilize these different paths and trails, and we should keep them, maintain them, and keep the community as safe and healthy as possible.
Mark Springer?
I think recreational dog walkers probably outnumber recreational trappers in town. At the same time, we shouldn't be discouraging, you know, our young people from learning traditional skills. But along with that, they have to be responsible. And people that are trapping in city limits, snaring, need to be responsible. And that's not a hard thing to do.
Haley Hansen.
Yeah, so, you know, I definitely think there's a compromise here. I mean, hearing both sides of it. But also, I've understood that there are a lot of foxes in town, too, which that's also a risk for dogs as well. And also, if there was a dog catcher in town, maybe there'd be fewer dogs running around getting caught in snares. I don't know. So I'd definitely be open to exploring, you know, some kind of solution to this, because I feel like it's something that we could come up with reasonably. Thanks.
Thor Williams.
I think it goes back working with the local population of people that trap within our community who have that position. I've been told by people that worked at McCann Youth Facility when they've trapped within the community, the number of foxes that they were trapping around our dump is a large number of animals. And those foxes tend to have rabies and could have rabies. And so keeping that population down helps public health and public safety. But I think if we worked with the local trappers, that we could solve this problem pretty easily.
Christy Schallenberger of KYUK with the final panelist question.
How can the council foster respect and civility between its members?
Mark Springer.
It's got to be a Forrest Gump quote there somewhere. It's a matter of being respectful and being professional and being collegial, and at some point being political. But there's really no reason why the council, no matter who is on it, shouldn't be able to get along in the manner that the public expects them to, and the manner that they should be as adults.
Thor Williams.
It comes down to council members willing to talk to each other. When council members don't talk to each other, they tend to get into their little forts, their little enclaves, and no longer want to talk to each other. And when that happens, that's when some of the times that people are not willing to listen to both sides. There's two sides of the story at all times, and just hearing one side and not hearing the other side tends to have that incivility. But usually if councils want to work together, they'll work together. And if they want to listen to each other, they'll listen to each other.
Alyssa Gustafson-Leary.
I think having open communication and transparency to make sure that, you know, each member of council respects each other and feels confident that they know that they're not being lied to about anything, that you can trust each other and know that that you don't have ulterior motives, or, you know, that we really just need to foster some respect and professionalism at our city council.
Haley Hansen.
I think opening that discussion up between members is important, and also, you know, admitting what we don't know and supporting each other through that, because not everybody up here knows everything about everything, right? That's why it's a deliberative body that sits and discusses things. People bring perspectives and facts and these things, and so I think being open to disagreeing with someone, but also letting them know that I have your back anyway, and that we can work through this, I think is important. Thanks.
CC Franco.
I think it really comes down to respect and communication, being able to respect your fellow council members, respect the community that we serve, and being able to communicate, whether that be listening to each other at council meetings, or listening to different city employees on their reports, and just being able to listen to the community and working together, knowing everyone's trying their best and we're all here to serve the community.
We have reached the end of the panelists' questions. Thank you to our journalist. We will take a 10-minute break from our live broadcast to share information about the upcoming election and the propositions on this year's ballot. We will then resume the Bethel City Council Candidate Forum with the candidates asking questions of each other and with questions from our audience. Thank you for listening to KYUK 640 AM. Stay with us.